Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
And I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
We're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Hello and welcome to the Back in Time podcast. This is Kyle Autry, and I'm normally joined by my co-host JD, but JD's on a work trip, and we had to re-record the episode because we had some technical difficulties, so I'm going to be flying solo on the first half of this, and then the second half of the episode, the full review of Cool Runnings, we'll have JD for that. So this is episode 26. We want to thank you for hitting the download button on today's episode. Please help support the show by rate, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. We have two new episodes that come out every week. The teaser trailer drops on Monday, and the full episode comes out on Wednesday. You can follow us on social media at Back in Time Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/backintimepod. I'm glad we're redoing the episode a little bit because we've had the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles came out on top, so congratulations to them and to their fan base. I thought it was a great game. I enjoyed every second of it. I really enjoyed the trailers and all the stuff that we saw with Solo, A Star Wars Story, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Skyscraper with The Rock. We have that new Castle Rock trailer with Bill Skarsgård from It. And there was just a lot of good things, a lot of hilarious commercials. In particular, I think the commercial of the night, it would have to go to Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. Their dance routine was just hilarious. I thought that was the best one that I saw. On the next episode, we'll definitely dive into Solo and Jurassic World and Castle Rock. But yeah, I thought the Skyscraper trailer looked really good with The Rock. I know JD's not as big of a fan of his as I am, but I'm definitely looking forward to that after seeing what he did with Jumanji and just some of the recent stuff that he's been doing, minus Baywatch, of course. I thought that looked really cool. And just seeing him jump off a giant skyscraper, it's got me interested. I also noticed that Neve Campbell plays his wife, and from my recollection, she's not been in a very big movie since probably Scream. So this might be a little bit of a resurgence for her. So looking forward to watching that. Now, let's do a little intro to Cool Runnings, and then we'll do some interesting facts here. And like I said, keep this kind of short and sweet today. Cool Runnings is a 1993 American sports comedy film directed by John Turteltaub and starring Leon, Doug E. Doug, Raul D. Lewis, and Malik Yoba, as well as the late, great John Candy. The film was released in the United States on October 1st, 1993. It was Candy's third-to-last film of his career, and the last of the films to be released during his lifetime. The film is loosely based on the story of the Jamaican national bobsled team's debut in the competition during 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. The film received positive reviews, and the film's soundtrack also became very popular with Jimmy Cleef's cover of I Can See Clearly Now, which reached the top 40 in several different nations. According to Leon, who was attached to the, had saw the script early on, said that it went through a bunch of rewrites and initially it wasn't very funny and it was really looking to be more of a serious sports drama. Which, if you're a fan of Cool Runnings, you know there's a lot of comedy, but there's also some very serious, nice moments during the film as well. And it was John Turteltaub who finally came in and was like the third or fourth director that they had attached that kind of turned some things around there. The film was shot in Calgary and Jamaica in February and March of 1993. The cast and crew filmed in Calgary first to take advantage of the snow. Then they filmed at Jamaican resorts of Montego Bay in Ocho Rios. Doug E. Doug said the producers were keen to boost the camaraderie of the actors, so they require them to eat together, arrive on set together, stay at the same hotel, and generally just hang out as much as possible. He also said John Candy was one of the nicest men he ever met in show business, and frankly, Doug says, he spent a lot of time telling us he loved us, and he was so warm and just a great guy. Malik Yoba, who played Yul Brynner, said the first dinner I remember having was John Candy inviting us all over for dinner. He had picked out music that he thought represented each character and gave it to us as a gift. I remember thinking that was a really classy move. He had also promised to take us salmon fishing in Alaska, but unfortunately he passed away too soon and we never got to do that. And then Yoba goes on to say that all of the actors are still very close to this day and they all had a great time on film. Now, I've got a couple interesting facts here. So at the time, Cool Runnings was the highest grossing live action film ever released under Walt Disney Pictures' banner. I thought that was interesting just because obviously they've had a lot of hits over the years. A lot of them have been the animated movies in the last, seems like, 10, 15 years. But I'm sure, with properties like Pirates of the Caribbean, they probably passed up Cool Runnings pretty quickly after that movie got released. There's also some pretty interesting casting that I found here. So Denzel Washington actually turned down the role of Darice Bannock. So I don't know if you can imagine a younger Denzel in the role of the Jamaican bobsled team captain here. I thought he would have probably done a really nice job, but I'm very happy with Leon because I think Leon definitely, one, is much taller and was in probably a lot better shape at that point than Denzel. No offense to him, but Leon really looks like he could be an Olympic athlete. I know he was 6'3" in real life, so he looked like a sprinter. Eddie Murphy turned down the role of Sanka Coffee, and mostly because of the pay that they had offered him. And, of course, that role went to Doug E. Doug, who is phenomenal in this movie. The dreadlocks, the snarky comments, the trash-talking that he does when he's doing Pushcart Derby. I'm sure Eddie Murphy, again, a great actor. I'm sure he would have done fine. But Doug E. Doug is Sanka Coffee. He's cast perfectly. These are the last two that I had, and these both go to the movie and then real life and some things that they kind of got wrong or skewed. Contrary to the story in the movie, the Jamaican bobsled team was met with open arms by the international bobsledding teams. One of the teams even went so far as to lend the Jamaican team a backup sled so they could qualify. Of course, in the movie, they show up without a single sled, much less a backup, and it's really terrible. It's falling apart. They're not met with open arms. In fact, they're kind of laughed at. So just to clear the air, the movie is not very factual on that end of things. And then also in the story, Herb Blitzer is basically exiled by the United States Olympic team because he hid weights in his sled to make it go faster. In the sport of bobsledding, adding weight to the sled is perfectly legal. In fact, sometimes it's even a safety measure for both the two- and four-man sleds so that they have minimum and maximum weights. And the extra weight of the sled is calculated and the total weight of the sled and its crew, so that would help kind of even it out and make up the difference. So that, again, is a small thing, but in the grand scheme of bobsledding, when you're watching it this winter and you're watching the Olympics, just know that they probably have some weight in the sled too, just like Herb Blitzer. 5 seconds, listen to Doc Brown say that we need more fuel. We'll have a clip from Cool Runnings, and then JD and myself will be back on the other side with the full review. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll be back on the other side.
What are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel.
Thank you for hitting the download button on today's podcast. We want to thank you guys for supporting us. And the best way you can support us is to get on the iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. That's what helps us build our audience. It also helps us pick up sponsors to keep this podcast going for free. I also want to make you guys aware of what's coming down the pipeline. Of course, we have our topics right now on Twitter for the next episode, which will be the movies that spawned trilogies. And you can vote for that topic. Stay tuned. At the end of the podcast, we'll have a full breakdown of all the different choices. We're going to be back next week with our horror episode. Looks like we're going to be doing Nightmare on Elm Street. We're going to be joined at that time by the guys from Black Cat Shadow. They're going to be hopping on our podcast, and then we're also going to be hopping on their podcast to discuss the sequel, Nightmare on Elm Street 2. So definitely check those guys out and subscribe and rate their podcast as well. The week after that, we're going to be doing the podcast of whichever one wins the poll topic. So make sure you get your vote in. We have one day left to vote. Make sure you stay tuned for the end of the episode here where we're going to break down the poll topic for Jim Carrey Week. Again, that's going to come out at the end of February, February 26th and the 28th. We'll have two episodes as always, the teaser trailer on the 26th, which is Monday, and the full episode on the 28th. So we're also going to be breaking down The Big Lebowski, which is the 20th anniversary for that movie, which came out in theaters on March 6th. So we're actually going to have a podcast on the 5th and on the 7th, and it's going to be Big Lebowski week. So get your dude on. And again, thank you guys for joining us, and let's get a clip from Cool Runnings, and we'll be back on the other side with the full review.
All right, the key elements for a successful sled team are a steady driver and three strong runners to push off down the ice. Ice! Well, it's kind of a winter sport, you know. You mean winter as in ice, baby? You mean winter as in igloos and Eskimos and penguins and ice? Possibly. See you.
All right, we're back from the break, and it's time to hop into some Cool Runnings here. JD, you ready to go?
I'm ready to rock. I'm ready to take off my shirt and dive down that bobsled lane.
Let's take off our pants and jacket. Good album. I love Blink-182, right?
Yeah, nice name drop.
You know, one thing I found interesting right at the beginning here is, and this only happens in a couple of movies, but it's a Buena Vista film, but the first thing that pops up is the Disney logo. Why do you think they do that?
Because Disney owns all.
So you think it's something where they screen it and they're like, okay, it's good. We can put the logo on it. If it's crap, then they keep the Buena Vista one on there.
It has to be. I mean, that has to be accurate.
Such a strange thing. But anyway, we have our first shot of Darius Bannick here. He's preparing to run the 100-meter race, and he's got a bunch of kids lined up to watch him. Darius races through the toilet paper finish line and then proceeds to just run pretty much all the way throughout Jamaica here, as we have some different shots. Of course, Darius Bannick is played by Leon Robinson. JD, what's your first impression here of Darius
Bannick? He's a good-looking guy. He's ready to rock. He's ready to roll. His fans are in his corner. They got the toilet paper ready for him to break. Like, you instantly want to root for him.
Are you a fan of Leon at all? Have you seen any of his other work?
The short answer is yes and no. The long answer is also yes and no. I know I'm familiar with his you know, what he's done. I just can't think of anything off the top of my head.
So he was in the movie The Temptations.
There you go.
Which is a good show. He also played Little Richard in Little Richard. It was fantastic in that. And then lately he's been in some different movies, one called Recovery Road and Where Children Play. So he's not like a mainstream, like A-list actor, but he's stayed really busy.
I definitely say he's definitely got your attention. He's floating around on the Kyle little atlas that you got going on for actors that you like to keep in your fantasies. I mean, on your mind.
The next scene, we meet Senka, and he's played by Doug E. Doug. What are your thoughts on Doug E. Doug here as Senka? I know we talked a little bit about him and the interesting facts because he was almost cast as Eddie Murphy, but they couldn't pony up the dough for Eddie Murphy, so we got Doug
E. Doug. Dude, I love one. His name is Senka Coffee, which, you know, as a kid, I had no idea what Senka Coffee was, but as an adult, I kind of laugh, and I'm like, that's really funny. That's what his name is. Which I think is, you know, telling of both, you know, who he is as a character and then, you know, the cultural effects of America on Jamaica, which is what the whole movie is about.
And he's continued the work too. He was in a little film in 2002 that you may remember, Eight-Legged Freaks with David
Arquette. He was in Eight-Legged Freaks?
Yeah, he plays Harlan Griffin in that one.
Good for him. I haven't seen Eight-Legged Freaks in a very long time.
Been a while. He has also voiced one of the characters in Shark Tale too. So good for him. So we're going to see Dorice kind of show up to wish Senka good luck with his pushcart derby race. Senka is going for the record for most wins in pushcart derby history in Jamaica. Senka has a little kid, kisses Lucky Egg here. It's the first time we see the Lucky Egg. And he says, feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme, get on up. It's pushcart time. And I just love the whole time how he's just talking crap to everybody as he's passing them here. What do you think of this first race
here? I didn't realize how big push carts were.
I didn't know push carts even existed.
I've never participated in. I've never participated in one. Like, I've never done that. I've never done like the Pinewood Derby. So like my car racing repertoire is non-existent, to say the best. So it was kind of an exciting scene. This whole movie is definitely introducing, you know, us as youngsters when we saw it to like a whole plethora of new things.
And he does win the race here, but as he does cross the finish line here, he crashes into a small hut. Dorice runs over and checks on him and says, Sanka, you dead? Yeah, man. And I love that they continue that throughout the film here. But what do you think of just that first line there and this kind of camaraderie that we already have between these two guys?
It definitely I love that you use the word camaraderie, because that's going to be a theme that's going to come back and it's going to play over and over, both, you know, positively and negatively throughout the movie and for the team. And, you know, the sort of the give and take that they have and that they're establishing early on, at least from a writing aspect, is like it's brilliant that they have, you know, this scene to be able to establish who they are, both as teammates and friends.
The next day, Dorice and his wife are sitting on the bed and she just wants to know if he's nervous. And he says, nope, he's ready for this. And we're at the trials next year. And his wife, Joy, sitting right next to Senka, who says he's a little concerned about Baldy over there. And we see Yul Brynner for the first time here, who's slapping his own head to pump himself up. We also meet Junior Bevel, who introduces himself to Dorice and tells him it's a real honor to race against him. The race begins. Dorice, Junior, and Yul get off to a hot start, but Junior ends up tripping and causing both Dorice and Yul to fall. And the end here is just Dorice looking up and seeing some other competitors finish the race here in front of him. So we get our other two characters here who are going to come into play. But what were your thoughts on the race here and your first impressions of Yul and Junior Bevel?
Well, first of all, Yul always scared the bejeebus out of me. He always reminded me of the guy from Living Single. You remember that show? Yeah. But the second, like, this scene, like, almost makes me want to cry, like, right from the beginning, because the way that they shoot it and the way that they set it up, and, you know, to see all of these Olympic hopefuls fail and fall, like, face first in the dust.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks. And then, like, the thing that always then, like, the second part that bothered me is, Jamaica is sending four people that aren't as good as their best to the Olympics. So you know that those guys that did win the race are going to get their asses kicked.
Yeah, they really were like the guys that were going to come in like fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh.
Right.
So, not going to bode well for them when it comes to medal time. So the next day here, Dorice is pleading with Mr. Coolidge to run the race again. He tells Dorice he will have to wait four more years or pick up another sport that Jamaica competes in. Dorice turns around and looks at a photo of his father and says, well, father, what do I do now? And Mr. Coolidge comes over to just console him a little bit when Dorice wants to know who's the guy standing in the picture next to his father. Coolidge says, that's Irv Blitzer. He's an American that lives here on the island. That is, unless he's been arrested or shot. He's a bookie. He was an Olympic bobsledder that tried to get your father to switch to bobsledding. He had some theory about using sprinters to push the bobsled faster. So Dorice wants to know if he can borrow the pitcher. And then he's on his way out the door here. And on his way out, he says, Mr. Coolidge, what's a bobsled?
So, it's an honest question. It's a great question.
Yeah, he doesn't know. So anyway, in the next scene here, Doris is telling Sanka about the bobsledding, and I'm going to actually play a clip here, and we'll listen to how he explains it to him here.
Yeah, no, I love it because, again, it takes another layer into their friendship and that camaraderie that they're building, because it doesn't matter what Doris is asking. Sanka's in for it. Like, right. I feel like if I asked you something like that, you would say no, but you wouldn't be joking because you're an asshole and I hate you.
Well, try it. Ask me for something.
Can I?
No fucking way.
Oh.
Let's move on. So they pull up to a bar next here, and we have our first shot of John Candy. He's listening to a horse race on a small radio, and he's yelling at it, trying to cheer on his horse here. He stands up after the horse loses and grabs a pool stick and proceeds to bash it into small pieces, just screaming the whole time, "Ah, hat! Ah, hat!" And then Sanka says, "That's the guy that won 2 gold medals? And Doris says, "You think so?" So Doris comes up and introduces himself. He wants to know if he would be interested in coaching the first Jamaican bobsled team. Irv grabs a pool stick, and Sanka says, "Doris, the pool stick, radio, remember?" And they take off, and Irv just goes and hits a cue ball. He just wants to play some pool that time. So they're hiding in the bathroom stall next, and Irv goes to open the door to go to the bathroom, and they scare the crap out of him here. Sanka says, "Greetings, sled guard." What do you think of this first encounter here with Irv Blitzer?
He definitely seems like he's a little bit, what's a good way of putting it? Uncentered? He doesn't seem like they are climbing up a tall mountain with Irv here. And John Candy does a great job. Like, his performance in this movie is phenomenal. But, like, the way that they introduce him, like, after having seen him in the picture, and is that actually him in the picture? Is that a super young John Candy that's looking great?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that's too bad, because I know we know, you know, he looks great in the picture. I wish that was him. I mean, if it was him and he looked that way, maybe he'd still be alive. Just saying.
So Irv grabs Doris by the neck and explains to him the issues of trying to be a Jamaican bobsled team. He says, "Snow, you don't have it. It's 900 degrees outside. Time, you don't have it. The Olympics are in 3 months. And me, you don't have me. As far as I'm concerned, the sport of bobsledding no longer exists. And I don't want to do it. I don't want to coach it. And most of all, and I mean most of all, I don't want to be within 200 miles of anybody that does." Doris wants to know why he still has the poster on the wall then, which Irv goes over and rips it up. Doris then slides over the picture of his dad and Irv. Irv says he hasn't seen that picture in 20 years. And then it gives a reflection of himself, and he goes, "Ugh." Doris explains he's Ben Bannock's son. Doris just wants a chance. Come on, coach me. Irv says, "You're a couple decades too late." Doris gives him a nice speech about how he came here 20 years ago to make the first ever Jamaican bobsled team, and you never got that chance. Look at me. I'm your chance. Take it. And Irv just takes a deep breath in. So there's kind of a lot to digest here, JD, but... you know, how does this scene, you feel like, help the storyline? And what do you think of, what's your first impression of John Candy here?
Well, the one comment that I want to make first is, and this goes to any of our listeners that, you know, maybe, you know, if you're an athlete, if you're playing sports, if you've got kids that are playing sports, DeReese is coachable. And that's an intangible that a lot of players don't have, a lot of athletes don't necessarily have, but that's the difference between an Olympic medalist and an Olympic hopeful, is he is ready and he is good to be coached. Like, he's begging for it. Like, I don't know. I love the way that his character's written, and I love the way that John Candy, he responds to it. Like, he realizes, like, you're not going to find somebody, like, at that caliber that is just, like, so desperate to be coached. It's just, and that's the theme that's going to continue on, and it's why, you know, Jamaica's going to be so successful, or they're going to do as well as they do throughout this movie is you know, that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so next we're in an auditorium. The whole room is filled with men. DeReese tells everyone to quiet down. Our trip to the Olympics starts right now. So DeReese introduces Coach Irving Blitzer as our expert coach. Sanka rolls the film and says, "You're on the air, sled guard." And we proceed to watch a black and white reel where Irv says, "It's the biggest, coldest roller coaster you've ever been on." Oh, and I almost forgot. The one drawback to this great sport is the crashes. Remember, in bobsledding, your bones don't break. No, no, no. They shatter. Now, who wants the bobsled? I turn on the lights here, and the only one left in the room is Sanka. Eventually, Yul Brynner walks in, and Baldy from the trials, and DeReese greets him, but Yul doesn't want him to touch him, and says, "Let me get one thing straight here. We may be teammates, but I am no one's friend." Problem, man. Yul's motivation here is to get off the stinking island, and Irv tells him, "There's only one problem. You're one Jamaican short of a bobsled team here." Junior Bevel enters. Yul immediately goes after him. DeReese has to calm him down. Best line of this scene here. So Yul calls Sanka a slinky head and then says, "How about I beat your butt right now?" Sanka says, "How about I draw a line down your head to make it look like a butt?" Yul says he's gone, but DeReese talks him back into it, and DeReese says, "Irv, take a look at the first Jamaican bobsled team." And Irv just says, "Oh, goody." So what'd you think of our first scene here with all four of our whole team now?
I like the way that the story ties back into itself. So, you know, we've already been introduced to him. We already know the stakes and the urgency and the disappointment that these characters have gone through. We already know the emotional, you know, roller coaster that they've been through, and now that they're going to be on an icy, bone-shattering, comical roller coaster, like it's a great setup to, you know, what's to come. And I agree, like the drawing a line on your bald head and making it look like a butt, like, man, come on, that was gangbusters, brilliant. That's brilliant. I've always thought that anytime I see somebody that's bald, I just want to draw a line on their head and make him an actual butthead.
It seems like something that would have really gotten a big laugh out of, like, Biff Tannen. So in this next scene here, the guys are introduced to a bobsled. Well, sort of. It's just like a metal pan with wheels on it. Yul is the third seat. Junior is going to be in the second seat. Sanka kind of cuts him off and says, "I'm the driver." But let's listen to a clip here, because this is a hilarious scene here between Sanka and Coach Blitzer.
"Let me tell you a little something, all right? When you need something from me, you don't have to hand me a bunch of lines. All you have to do is look at me in the eye and say, 'Sanka, you are my best friend. We've been through a whole heap together, and I really, really need you.'"
"Sanka, you're right. And you are my best friend. We've been through a whole lot together.
Heap.
Sorry, man. Go eat together.
And I really, really need you.
And I really, really need you.
Forget it.
But you just said if I said that,
man. All right, man.
What'd you think of this scene here between these two?
It's a good banter, but I respect the level of foreshadowing that it goes into to really, like, you know, level the playing field for what's to come. And we get to see Sanka Coffey remain as, you know, a great comical character, but because he can't take on the serious role that the driver requires.
It's so funny to me listening to Sanka's voice. It's just so high. I could you do a good Sanka impression? No, I don't think I could get that high.
I'm not even going to bother trying.
"I am driver. I must drive."
Whoa. So, you should not have done that. That was no good, man.
It felt bad when it came out,
too. That's what she said.
Weird. Anyway, Junior is in the next scene. He's preparing a speech to tell his father that he's going to be an Olympian. But really, we think he might be talking to his dad, but he's really just talking to his dog here. He's decided to go to the Olympics. His dad pulls up and they're loaded here, man. They're driving nice cars. They got this big house. His father tells him he just got him a job with Webster and Cohen. And it's out of Miami, so he'd be leaving the island here. And guess what? You start at the end of the month. Junior tries to say something, but his dad just cuts him off. And he says he's going to go in to tell his mother the good news. And Junior turns to his dog and says, "We sure told him." What do you think of this interaction with his dad? And he's got an interesting relationship with his father here.
Okay, first of all, and this confused me for the longest time when I was a kid. How is this not just Carlton and Uncle Phil? Like, come on, right? I mean, this is just a scene right out of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, it's a good comparison for sure. I do love me some Fresh Prince. I do love me some Fresh Prince, though.
Also Fresh Plints.
Yeah. It's got to be jelly because jam don't shake like that. Next day, the guys are learning how to push start. We have a montage of the guys falling down. Irv being pushed in his Volkswagen down the road. This continues to, and they just, or actually their times continue to drop little by little, but they continue to crash all over the place here. We also have a scene with an ice cream truck, and Irv is talking with Derice, Yule, and Junior, and he says, "If I've said it once, I've said it a million times, cold weather endurance is vital to your success." He opens up the freezer door, and Sanka is in there with frost all over his head. And he breaks off one of his dreadlocks. What do you think of that scene?
I think cold weather endurance is critical. And it's a hilarious scene. And it always makes me wonder, like, what is the ice cream truck game in Jamaica like? Do they rent
it's
that
truck? It's got to be strong. I mean, I would imagine it's always hot as hell.
I went to Jamaica once. Yeah. And I don't recall seeing ice cream trucks. But, I mean,
this feels like somebody's dropping the ball then.
Well, but what? The movie takes place in 1987?
Yeah, it would be 88.
And, you know, just to throw back on that, like, I always remember this movie taking place in present day. Like, I don't remember it taking place in the past.
To your point, if they don't make a reference of it being 1988, I mean, it would have to be just to follow the storyline because that's where they had the Olympics and 88 was in Calgary.
No, they do make a reference in the beginning because they're going to qualify for the games and they're qualifying for the Summer Olympic Games.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, I just thought what I was referring to is I don't remember there being like a part where like it flashes up on the screen and says like Jamaica 1988. Like they don't make that type of reference, but they do definitely reference the fact that they're trying to qualify for the games.
Yeah, and it's just the only point that I'm trying to make is like if it's easy to forget that this doesn't take place in 1993, like, because that's just such how amazing the movie is. It's so, like, poignant and present day.
Yeah, and I will say this, too. We may talk about this at the very end, but this movie doesn't come off as dated to me. This doesn't feel like it was 25 years ago.
Oh, goodness, no.
So that shout out to the director who did a fantastic job. This movie really holds up. So in this next scene here, they finally get into the sled for the first time. They fly down the hill. And they end up crashing into a police car here. They tell the cops that they're the first Jamaican bobsled team, and the cops just start laughing hysterically until Irv comes running down the hill. 5'9", 5'9", you did it! He goes up to the police officer and says, "Get out of the way!" He tells the cops he's their coach, and then he directs the guys to get back to the top of the hill. Let's do it again, you slackers. So they're making some progress here, but it's just such a funny scene with Herb Blitzer trying to run down the hill.
5'9", man. 5'9".
This is definitely the first signs of life here as far as their progress goes, and Herb's really excited. Meeting with Mr. Coolidge next, trying to get some funding. He says he's not asking for a winter sports program. I just need a measly 20 grand. But Coolidge isn't buying it. Irv says, "These guys can do it." And Coolidge gets pissed and says, "You're not going to waste what little money we have to embarrass us like you did your own country." Irv walks out and tells Derice no go. And Derice isn't fazed even a little bit. He just says, "That's fine. We'll raise the money on our own." And the next scene here is Sanka going, "No people say, you know they can't believe. Jamaica, we got that bobsled team." What'd you think of this scene here? with the guys trying to make money and all doing their little gimmicks here.
Well, I think like first, like I want to touch on the fact that we've got another big, big elephant in the room of foreshadowing. Because what did Irv do to embarrass his country?
We don't know.
And it's such question. It's almost like a throwaway line. Like they just sneak it in there so quick, doesn't notice that it's in. And you get, you know, thrown right into the next scene where we get to see Sanka Coffee breaking it down, and we get to see another great, this movie is like filled with great montages. What is this? This is like montage like 3 or 4 by this point.
It's classic 1990s, man. All montages.
All montages all the time. And
we're going to show everything. And if we have to put it in fast forward to do it, well, damn it, it's getting in there.
I love it.
So, but yeah, I mean, I love a lot of these little scenes here. You got Yul doing arm wrestling contest. He's killing everybody until he eventually loses to this big woman. And just the look on his face as he's losing to her is just amazing. You got Doris, who's got a line all the way out the door for kisses, and there are zero people in Sanka's line. And eventually his wife comes up and pulls him away, and then Sanka finally thinks he's going to plan a wet one here, and it's just an old lady with no teeth.
No.
And then the last part here is Sanka singing, and the man comes over and says, "I'll pay you a dollar just to shut up."
And that's important, the fact that he gets paid $1 to shut up. Well, in the upcoming scene, when they're each like breaking down how much money they've made, and right. Sanka's made like $1.10.
It's like $1.10. Yeah, they're totaling it up here. And this is the first time that we see Doris get a little bit down here. That is until Junior shows up. And Doris tells him to unpack his bag because we're not going. And Junior says, "That's too bad," and unzips his bag and just dumps a whole pile of money on the table here. Doris says they can't accept it. Junior says, "If he hadn't tripped them in the first place, we'd already be going to the Olympics." Junior also admits his father doesn't know that he sold his car, and he doesn't know he's part of the team, which makes Irv just shake his head. His dad thinks he's off to Miami to work for Webster and Cohen. So I love their drive, though. You gotta give them credit here. These guys were pretty much unfazed. And, you know, Junior comes in to save the day.
Thankfully. I mean, that's what Carlton, I mean, Junior's, he's good for that. You know, like it's so great to think of like the depth that these characters have. And Junior, like he's such a conflicted character, but at the same time, he's a gifted athlete. And he's a giving person. Like, he sells his car for them to go to the Olympics without even a thought. Like, there's no discussion. Right. There's no anything. It's like, duh, this is what I'm doing for us.
How amazing would it have been if they would have went inside of Junior's house and just out walks Karen Parsons as, like, Hillary Banks?
And then Will Smith is just there grooving.
So the next shot here, they're boarding a plane in beautiful, sunny Jamaica. And they land in snowy, cold Canada. The doors open up to go outside, and they're just freezing. So Sanka runs back in, puts on every single pair of clothes that's in his bag, and then puts his bag over his entire body, just looking like a human potato. Outside, Doris wants to know what he's smoking. Sanka says, "I'm not smoking, man. I'm breathing." Being from the Midwest here, this made me laugh really hard. Because, I mean, I remember going outside this morning and I was smoking. What'd you think of this scene, though?
That's the humidity out there, man. That's what'll get you in the cold. Definitely catches up, sneaks up on you, and freezes you until you're smoking. I, on the other hand, it was like 50 degrees today, and I went outside in like a t-shirt. Everybody was wearing their parkas, and people were looking at me like I was crazy.
Bus pulls up and the guys sprint into it. Irv says, "What's the matter? You guys cold?" A sign at the airport says negative 25 degrees as the bus drives off. So their first stop here is to the winter store to get some proper jackets and winter gear. Irv goes to register the team for bobsledding. He eventually finds the correct table. The guy initially doesn't believe him until he pulls it up on his giant computer. That couldn't have been more 1980. He said, "What do you know? Jamaican bobsled team." And he finds out the time to qualify has dropped 3 seconds. He also runs into some old teammates and an old coach of his. One of the guys says, Jesus Christ, Irv, what have you done to yourself? The other guy is not as mean, though, and Roger agrees to meet him in a half hour for lunch. Yeah, one thing I wrote down here, I just feel like, you know, John Candy's a pretty good sport because I feel like we're constantly in this movie kind of poking at his weight, which, I mean, it has to be like, there's no way he's just like, oh, I'm fat. Oh, well.
Yeah, but I think
like, that, you know, he has like a complex on that.
Well, but I think it really goes, it shows the depth of his character and, you know, comparing him into the photo from earlier when he was a young, strapping white John Candy.
Right.
And, you know, for him to have gone down on the downward spiral that he has, like there's a realization of that he is and was an Olympian and not like the shot put or something like that, where you can just, you know, be.
No, I definitely understand your point. It's just the guy's just not subtle about it.
No,
just,
not at all.
Jesus Christ. Roger shows up to meet Irv. Irv tries to beat around the bush a little bit before finally dropping the bomb that he needs a bobsled. Roger said he can't believe you came all the way to Calgary without a sled. And the kicker is he only has $5,000 to pay for it. Roger just can't believe it. He says, you know, I can't do it. And Irv guilt trips him and says, remember when you wanted to make the team? Did I say, Roger, I can't do it? And Roger agrees to help him out. And he wants to know if this is just a big joke or do you really expect these guys to qualify? And Irv says, not only are they going to qualify, but they're going to turn some heads while they're doing it. He says, three of these guys run the 100 in under 10 flat. I don't care who you are. That's lightning. Roger brings up a good point here because he says, well, can lightning run on ice? What do you think of that?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think lightning can run on ice. Do you know the answer to that?
I sure don't.
I know I can't run on ice, and they have special shoes. So I think Roger's onto something because there was a lot of training that they could not do in Jamaica that they now have to have a montage for.
So in this next scene here, the guys are at a skating rink and they're trying to learn how to just basically walk on the ice a little bit. And it just consists of them falling down. There's a funny shot of Yule just kind of tiptoeing and then Junior grabs a hold of him and causes him to fall down. Irv just says, you got to run on your tiptoes. And then eventually the hockey team comes into play. What do you think of this scene here?
Dude, I love Yule in this scene because he's such a big, bad mother effer. And when he shoulder checks that hockey player and then immediately falls.
Right.
I think that's like the badass anthem that everybody has in their mind when they're like, I can be out of my element. I can just lay the smack down even if I embarrass myself.
We're outside in the next scene here and it really just Dorice. And he's watching the Swiss team do one of their practice runs here. And we got our first nine. And they push off and go down the hill. And you can just see in Dorice's eyes, just amazed at how good this team is. I mean, they get down the hill pretty quick, pretty smooth. What'd you think of this scene here? It's really our first shot of any real bobsledding.
It is. It's so cool because I feel like there can be like an alternate universe movie of cool runnings that focuses on the Swiss. I would like to see that because they're pretty badass. And, you know, we get to see a lot of them coming up later and, you know, they're very nice men. You know, they're not the kind of cheap shot in a bar type of people and they're not Swiss Army knives. But like, you know, I like that they got a great bobsled.
Yeah. Well, speaking of great bobsleds, we're going to see the Jamaican bobsled next. Great may not be the word to describe it because it's literally falling apart as they kind of pull the cover off of it as we hear parts just dropping on the ground. What do you think of our first shot of the sled here?
Dude, I totally like never put two and two together from the scene earlier when he's like, hey, we don't have a sled. and so it's just so unfortunate that they came all this way with the limited funds that they have and they don't have a sled and they get this like little jalopy. Like, they have a Ford Escort that they're trying to take down this roller coaster lane. And the fact that it, like, supports them and it doesn't, like, instantly, like, I was expecting it to, like, just crumble under their weight.
So in this next scene here, the guys are pulling up to do their trial run. And they pull the bobsled off the back of the truck. As they kind of set it down, they scan and every single team is just staring at them and not saying a single word. Talk about a fish out of water here. Poor Jamaican guy showing up on the bobsled hill with all these pale white guys.
Yeah.
So they're gonna get ready for their first test run here. So instead of having them actually do a real start, Irv just has them all get into the bobsled, and they put the helmets on here. My favorite part here is Sanka's helmet doesn't fit him, and Irv just like tomahawks him on the top of the head.
Of course, his helmet doesn't fit him.
As they sit down here, and one of the guys from the stand says, "Are you gonna tuck them in too at night?" Everybody kind of laughs. And then Dries says, "What's his problem?" And Irv explains that's one of the best drivers in the world for bobsledding. So he just redirects Dries, gets him ready here, gets him focused, pushes him down the hill here. They just kind of bounce all over the course here. They don't crash until they get to the last turn where they flip over, I would assume, on their head. We don't actually see anything. But what do you think of their first trial run here?
It's fun to watch them have their first actual run, and I think it goes better than one would expect. I'm expecting like the whole bobsled to just evaporate and like disintegrate underneath their weight. So the fact that they actually make it down the hill, like, I think Irv Blitzer is a great coach, and that he pushes them instead of making them do their own running start in front of everyone. Like, he's teaching a child to ride a bicycle.
Now they're in the hotel room next, kind of winding down the night. Sanka is cooking some stuff on a little skillet there, or a hot plate as he calls it. And he's reading a comic book. Yul kind of makes fun of him for reading. Sanka says, "Well, if it's a children's book, then it's too advanced for the likes of you." And he pulls it back. Yul kind of gives them this little speech about how they're fools and they'll be on the island forever, and how he's not going to do that, and he's going to his castle, and he shows him a photo here, which makes Sanka start laughing, and they have to tell him the bad news that it's not a house you can buy. That's where the Queen of England lives.
I hate this scene. I felt so bad for Yul, even like as a kid, as an 8-year-old kid. I was like, no. It's like, even I know what Buckingham Palace is, you poor soul.
There's a nice moment here, though. Up to this point, Junior and Yul have really not gotten along very well. Junior grabs the crumbled up postcard and takes it over to him and says, "You go get your castle, Yul Brynner." Thought that was a nice moment between these two.
Yeah, it was very, very pretty. I mean, you know, a couple tears. It's a tear-jerking moment. Again, like, I love this movie because it really explores the depths of the characters and goes beyond just who they are as athletes and just who they are as people and just who they are as Jamaicans. Like, there's a lot to each character. Every character's an onion.
Now, this next scene here, the guys are going for another trial run. Actually, no, this is the first one they actually try and get into the sled. The funny part of this to me is the scene with Sanka, and he's got that like hot rubber thing in his chest that's been trying to keep him warm. And he pulls it out, and he's like, "What is that, Sanka?" And he just pulls it out, and then Irv comes over, grabs it, and just throws it over his shoulder. And then the guys, they try to get into the sled, but Dries can never get his foot in. So there's a shot of them in the newspaper here just falling flat on their faces, which unfortunately Junior's dad reads the next morning as he's eating breakfast and slams it down on the table here. So the cat's out of the bag here.
Dude, Uncle Phil is pissed.
So we got this next scene here where we're going to find out finally what Irv did. So one of his old teammates sits down next to Dries, who's waxing the bottom of the sled. I don't know exactly what he's doing. But what do you think of this scene here where we kind of find out exactly what caused Irv Blitzer to be exiled from the U.S. team?
Well, like, I'm so thankful that you mentioned what you did earlier about, you know, the whole rules and technicalities of it. And, you know, knowing that, it's kind of like, seems a little overblown that they're so, like, angry at him. You know, I mean, every sport, there's little things that you can do to sort of ensure that you are have an edge on your opponent. I mean, that's all he did, right?
Yeah. Yep, that's all he did. In this next scene here, we've got Junior and Yul. They're getting ready to go out for the night when a telegram arrives, which back in 1988, you couldn't just text and be like, "Hey, I need you to call me because you're in Calgary and you're supposed to be at Webster, Webster and Cohen." You had to telegram somebody. It just says, "Come home." So again, his dad is... It's an interesting relationship, and it's one where it feels like dad kind of tells him what to do, and Junior just goes along with it. Any thoughts on that?
It's so unfortunate to see Junior and his character to be sort of like marginalized by his dad and to have that like dictator type figure over him. And like, yeah. I think that's like such the beauty part of the Olympics is it, when it comes to the Olympics, all that there is the athletes and their sports, politics and dictators and presidents and all of that shit is like gone. All that matters is you with your opponent. And at the end of whatever you're doing, you shake their hand and you know that you have their respect and they have yours. And it sucks that Junior's dad doesn't realize that.
It's a good point. So we're at a country bar next. Again, I love that the Jamaican bobsled team's hanging out at a country bar. Sanka's just out there dancing away. He doesn't know any of the dances, but he's having a good time anyway. Yul and Junior are sitting down drinking a couple beers, and Junior's just kind of venting, and he's so tired of his dad, and he eventually slams down his beer. Well, what should I do? And then the guy from earlier that told Irv to tuck him in turns around and says, "Be quiet, Jamaica." And he kind of rips into him a little bit here, and Junior just takes it. So that's going to force Yul to basically grab him by the back of the neck and take him into the bathroom. I've got a pretty nice scene here between these two. So I'm going to a little clip of Yul wanting to know what Junior sees in himself. I love the ending here with Yul just going, "Where are you going? Our pep talk wasn't over," and Junior just comes out and gets right in this guy's face. What do you think of that scene, though, in the bathroom?
You know, I think we all had that moment in our lives where we wish we had gotten that pep talk and that we wish that we can get in the face of some Eastern European and show them that, you know, you see pride and you see power, and it's not like this like Nazi symbolism thing, because it's like, dude, calm down. And you just want to punch the bully in the face. Unfortunately for me, I was always the bully.
Right. Okay. Interesting. How's that working out for you?
Oh, it's great. Like, to the kids out there, the bully track is amazing. You pick on kids. The thing is, you have to pick on them, but also let them do your homework for you so you get good grades.
Right, okay. That explains your straight A average.
Thank you.
I always found it weird. So Junior comes right into this guy's face. He gives him a piece of his mind, but it doesn't really work out well for him here, because the guy just starts pushing him, eventually shoves him down on the ground, and then gets about a foot from his face and says, "Say something, Jamaica." Fortunately for Junior, Yul's right behind him, and he goes, "No problem, man," and punches him right in the face. This big fight breaks out here. I love the part where Sanka is dancing, and he's just like, "Oh, I gotta go, Missy." And he just goes and jumps right off the table and lands right on top of everybody. What'd you think of the fight scene here?
Dude, Sanka's a badass mother effer himself. He doesn't even think twice. Just he's totally about to lay into this white chick, and then he's like, "Nope, I'm about to lay into this white Eastern European dude instead."
Yeah, it's hilarious. He literally just takes off his hat and goes flying into the pile.
He doesn't think twice. It's like, that's what you do for friendship, and that's why they're so good on the ice, because of that camaraderie that they're all building, and it's a growing thing between them all, including Yul.
And the next scene here is the guys are sitting down on the couch. Darice is kind of lecturing him a little bit. Sanka is kind of laughing the whole time. But yeah, he said, "You're not going to be laughing when Irv gets here." Irv eventually busts in the door, kind of tears into the guys here. What'd you think of this scene?
Irv steps up as a coach like massively here. Like, it's one of those scenes, like, and we've both coached, like, and we've both been athletes, but it's one of those scenes where the coach isn't actually mad because he knows that the team has grown together. Like, it's an intangible situation where it's like, you don't want what happened to have happened, but it's a learning lesson that can't be taught. Like, you need to be in the shit with your friends, with your teammates, and you need to stand up for one another. And you need to realize that, like, on the ice or off the ice, you're brothers.
And that's pretty much, you know, he's kind of driving that point home in his own little way, kind of right in their face. And he's like, I didn't come all the way here to get my butt whooped. And speaking of that, might be doing some butt whooping of my own. See you tomorrow, ladies. I love that the next day that they wake him up with an alarm clock and they're just like, wake up, it's butt whooping time.
Like, I always underestimate like how great of a sports movie this is. Like, personally, I always think of it as, you know, a winter movie or a comedy. But like, you know, to compare it to like Remember the Titans from the episode from, you know, weeks and weeks ago, it's like on par with that, where it's like the players, the athletes need to realize that they have control of their own destiny. And from a writing standpoint, I don't think anybody was expecting the next scene to be them waking him up.
And we have another montage next here.
Of course.
And I'm going to insert some music in the background because it's some of my favorite music of the movie here, The Rise Above It. We got The Rise Above It. The guys are running. They're doing their test runs here. They're actually getting into the sled. They're doing weightlifting. There's another shot of them on the ice just falling behind the sled. Actually, it's really just Sanka kind of holding on to the end. My favorite part, though, is the chin-ups. I was never a chin-up guy. JD, did you ever make it up to a full chin-up?
No, chin-ups are, you know, you can bench press 300-400 pounds, but trying to chin-up was difficult for some reason.
Chin-up is like my nightmare. Of them being like, hey, you need a... I need to get 10 chin-ups out of you. I'm like, 10? I might give you like a quarter chin-up. One.
Right. What are you going to ask next? To climb the rope?
It makes me feel funny. The next scene here is the guys running and they throw snowballs right in Ur's face. He thought he was going to be smooth and get them instead. We've got another test run. We've got the guys sitting in a bathtub. They're going over all the different turns. You know, Irv is... can tell they're getting better because there's a scene here where Irv's just kind of cheering them on. They just keep running in this scene. And then we get to the point where they're going to go for their official time trial. So in the next scene, Irv pumps up the guys by telling them, if we're going to convince these judges that we're world-class sledders, then we'd better look like world-class sledders. Everybody's really excited about these new uniforms, except for Sanka, who says, I'll freeze in this. What do you think of the new look of the uniforms and Sanka?
The uniforms are badass, man. Like, I almost want to wear skin-tight clothing just so I can look as cool as Jamaica looks. I mean, right? I mean, they're badass.
Seems like an odd excuse for you to get into skin-tight clothing, but I'll accept.
And you didn't complain.
Irv is told that his old coach will be the third judge in the tower, and they also lowered the qualifying time another 2 seconds. Irv says, no problem, man. So they're at the top of the hill, preparing for their official qualifying time. Irv yells up in the booth, now, now, now! And they jump into the sled. They've definitely made a lot of improvements here as they fly through the course. They get to the finish line here. Irv is asking for an official time. The guys stand up, take off their helmets, and the time pops up, 59.46, and they officially qualify. What do you think of the guys? It feels like they've come a really long way at this point.
Yeah, this is a triumphant moment for them, both as individuals. You know, they're really clicking as a team. John Candy's really clicking as their coach. It's great to see everything finally come their way, and they look damn snappy while doing it.
Yeah, they're looking good. I mean, they're finally getting to the point where they're going to paint their sled. Seems long overdue, but it looks great now. Rocking the Jamaican colors. Sanka says, no one's had this much fun in a sled since Santa Claus. They toast a few times here. They're just drinking Coca-Cola. Sanka wants to know what they should name the sled. Junior says, how about Tallulah? Everybody starts laughing. Sanka says, it sounds like a $2 hooker. How'd you come up with that? And Junior says, it's his mom's name.
Oh, his mom's so his like, mom's name is Aunt Viv.
So, yeah, it's a little awkward there. And Sanka turns to Doris, who says... they're going to call it Cool Runnings. It means peace be the journey. What'd you think of that? That's a pretty cool name, and I like the explanation, too.
Yeah, it's sort of it comes full circle to one, the title of the movie. Peace be the journey being, you know, a metaphor for, you know, the entire movie, the journey that they've gone through. It's not about win or lose. It's, you know, it's a classic sports movie in that the underdogs are realizing their potential, and it is... you know, I don't know. I like it. Tallulah was a great name. I kind of feel bad that they poo-pooed all over it because he was dead serious about naming it that. But Cool Runnings, this is a great name. And how do they get all the dents and the rust out of the sled? I mean, it looks like a new sled, doesn't it?
For sure it's a new sled. Let's not kid ourselves here. Movie magic isn't that good.
And what, they just had cans of paint, too, and it came out so slick and beautiful.
Right.
I mean, I've tried painting walls before, and it doesn't turn out that well.
Mm-mm. They get another telegram, and Irv reads it and says, "We are officially disqualified." So the next scene here, Irv busts into the Alliance meeting. He wants to know why they disqualified my guys. The Alliance says they've decided to change their policy. One guy says, "We have concerns about potential for embarrassment." Irv says, "I didn't realize four black guys could make you blush." Burn.
I want to bust into a meeting and say that one time. I'm going to do that next time I'm at work. I'm just going to bust in and say that.
Irv said, "If it's about me, if it's about revenge, you know, take it out on me. Don't take it out on my guys. So let's put everything on the table. 15 years ago, I made the biggest mistake of my life. I cheated. I embarrassed my family. I let my team down, my country, and most importantly, my coach." And he gives a really good speech here. He says they've done everything you've asked of them, and they did it with you laughing in their face. And it doesn't matter if they come in first or 50th. These guys have earned the right to represent their country. They've earned the right to march into that stadium and wave their nation's flag. That's the single greatest honor an athlete can have. That's what the Olympics are all about. And 16 years ago, I forgot about that. Don't you go do the same thing. And he apologizes for interrupting their meeting and walks out. What'd you think of this speech here from John Candy? This is, to me, probably the best scene of the movie.
In terms of movie speeches, this is probably a better speech than Independence Day. Like, I forgot how powerful, this is. This is, politician-level speech giving that he does. And, you know, the words that they say that come out of his mouth. That was sounded so stupid. That was a purred happily moment.
I think this kind of goes to the genius of John Candy. And this is probably the one thing that I feel like maybe Chris Farley didn't have as an actor. Is he had the ability to really flip the other switch. And could make you almost cry as much as he could make you laugh.
Oh, for sure. And the way that he delivers it and then the way that he ends it, he gives such a powerful, riveting speech. And then he just ends it with sass. He's like, "You're going to listen to me and then screw you because I'm John Candy and I'm right."
I would love to be a fly on the wall there. Like when he finished filming, the director just cut. We got it. And that's how you do it, folks. Take notes. Next scene. The next day, Irv gets a call here, and he's really just downplaying. He says, "Okay, yep, I understand." He hangs up the phone. Doris wants to know, who was it? "Ah, it's the Alliance, you know. They said, we're back in." And then the guys start celebrating. And the next day, we see him on TV carrying the Jamaican flag and walking into the stadium for opening ceremonies. So, what'd you think?
I want to know, have you ever tried that little shtick? Like downplay a phone call, does that actually work? If it's a really good phone call and you're just like, "Oh, okay," and then people are on the edge of their seat and they're like, "Oh, what is going on? This sounds like it's gonna be really good," and you're just like, "Oh, okay," and then boom, you hit them with good news. I've never done that.
I actually do it all the time, and it's from Friends. Joey used to do it all the time.
Are you seriously quoting Friends again?
Well, my wife totally gets the reference. I'll come down there. I'll be like, "Yeah, bad news. Yeah, I got him." She's just like, "Gosh dang it."
Well, damn you. I'm going to one day do it. And I'm going to do it to you. And you're going to think something awful's happened to me, but it'll be something good.
We got to knock at the door next. It's Junior's father. And he tells him as they go into the hallway, "You might not have done what you were asked, but you will do what you were told." Junior tries to talk, but his dad cuts him off two different times. And as he gets into the elevator, Junior doesn't move. He hasn't said a thing for himself. But as the door starts to close, Junior says, "Pride. Power." And then he stops the door and he wants to know what his dad sees in him. His dad tells him he sees a lost little boy who's lucky to have a father who knows what's best for him. Junior says he's not a lost little boy. He's a man. He's an Olympian. And he's staying right here. And the elevator door shuts. And Yule, who's been watching the whole thing, just says, "Hey, Junior. Badass mother." What'd you think of this scene? Junior finally standing up to his dad.
One, I think it's creepy as hell that Yule is just out in the hallway watching and listening. He's totally perving on him. But it's I like the scene a lot, and especially when he calls himself an Olympian. Like, that sort of gave me shivers when he's like, yeah, I'm an Olympian. Okay, like, come on. Like, to be able to say that is, you're a badass mother.
It's really cool. It's also kind of strange that his dad would call him a lost little boy when he's, you know, a man in his 20s and he's at the Olympics as a qualifier.
In just Canada. Like,
really? What have you done other than get me a job at Webster and Cohen?
Oh, that's the number one broker in Miami, so.
Seriously, Uncle Phil. The next day, we prepare for day one of the races. The announcers do some introductions. They mention the Swiss, the East Germans, the Canadians. They're all favorites. The Swiss go first, followed by Team USA. And we have another montage here. Can't believe it, but we do. And it's just team after team, just kind of taking off, getting off to a good start. And then we arrive at the Jamaican team, who's going last on the first day. The announcers say they're worried for their safety. So Derice goes around slapping the heads of his teammates. Sanka wants to know what he's doing. Says, it's what the Swiss do to psych themselves up. Sanka says, well, they also make those little knives, but you don't see us doing that. I love that line. Get off to a terrible start here. Yule is standing up all the way down to turn one here, so they barely even get into the sled. One of the announcers comments that, I don't know if Derice Bannock is driving the sled or if the sled is driving him, and they put up a pretty poor time here on the first race. What'd you think here?
Dude, for one, I mean, these announcers are... It's like, chill out, announcer. This is bobsledding. Like, how is he going to trash talk like that? And then it made me wonder, is there really, like, bobsledding announcers that commentate like that? Like, how do you become an announcer of bobsledding?
Good question.
No, I'm asking you. You tell me.
You probably have to have a background in it.
Damn it.
I would imagine there's probably the guy, one of them that's like a former Olympian, and then a guy that's just an announcer and just knows his stuff, would be my guess.
I missed the boat.
Most sports. You got Marv Albert and you got Charles Barkley.
You got,
that's how they do it.
Jerry the King Lawler, and you got Jim Ross.
You got a spaghetti, you got the meatball.
You got penis, you got potato.
So the next, in this next scene here, Irv is telling him, you choked. You were ready, and you choked. And y'all better figure out a way to stay loose out there, because that's something I can't help you with. Sanka and Derice have a pretty cool moment here. Derice kind of starts in about the Swiss again, and Sanka's like, shut up with the damn Swiss. The whole Swiss thing is what got us off on the wrong foot anyway, and he didn't come all the way up here to figure out who he is and where he came from. Sanka says, if we look Jamaican, talk Jamaican, walk Jamaican, is Jamaican, I don't know what that even means, but that's what he says, we sure as hell better bobsled Jamaican. So the next day, they enter the stadium, and they're singing their Jamaican team song here, and they're super loose. So whatever they did, it worked. What do you think of the moment there between Sanka and Derice?
You know, Sanka, this whole movie has been, he's a backbone character, you know, like he's written off as the comic, you know, the sidekick, and he's goofy and he's silly, but like for him to bring it home like that with another great speech. I mean, I love the way that they stuff great speeches in this movie into like normal dialogue where it doesn't feel like it's a, everybody gather around, I'm going to, you know, give you some, drop some knowledge on you, but. Right. Man alive, that's another great speech.
And they have a new chant, too. So Sanka says, feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme, get on up, it's bobsled time. And they take off. The announcer even mentions that was a hair faster than the Swiss. Flying through the course now, and they really redeem themselves here on day two. They finish with 56.53, which is like 3 seconds faster than their qualifying time. Irv is yelling, yes, yes, did you hear that time? And the announcers are saying, watch out, world, the Jamaicans are coming. That little moment between, you know, Coach ripping their butt and Sanka and Derice has got them back on track here.
You know,
next scene.
No, I'm going to go ahead and cut you off. Don't say ripping their butt after he said that there's nothing that he can do to make them loose.
That's true.
Okay. I just wanted to call you out on that one.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anytime. Go rip some loose butt.
Derice wants to know in the next scene why Irv cheated. Let's listen to a clip here of the end of the scene. This is our last great speech from Irv here.
Hey, Coach.
Yeah.
I have to ask you a question.
Sure.
But You don't have to answer if you don't want to. I mean, I want you to, but you can't. I understand.
You want to know why I cheated, right?
Yes, I do.
That's a fair question. It's quite simple, really. I had to win. You see, Therese, I'd made winning my whole life. And when you make winning your whole life, you have to keep on winning, no matter what. You understand that?
No, I don't understand, Coach. You had 2 gold medals. You had it all.
Therese, a gold medal is a wonderful thing. But if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it.
So give me your thoughts on the scene here. Another, man, just the way that he kind of like pauses and the emotion behind John Candy is amazing.
Yeah, I like the comparison that you made about, you know, Chris Farley's not lack of ability, but, you know, his John Candy hits ranges that a lot of actors aren't able to do.
Right.
And the, like you're saying, like the way that he delivers and the tone of his voice and his cadence and like everything about this, again, another speech is phenomenal. And it's completely like it makes sense. You know, like if you're nothing without the medal, you're nothing with it. I mean, that's so applicable to like everything in life. From now on, like anytime, even like when I'm deciding what to eat, like if I'm nothing without this pizza, then I'm going to be nothing with it. And I need to.
What if it's a tuna sandwich?
It applies. If you're nothing without that tuna sandwich, man, you're nothing with it. Think about it. Next time you eat food, which you'll probably do the next time you're hungry.
Last day of competition. It's medal time. The announcers say the big surprise is Jamaica. They might actually have a chance here to win. And with the type of push start that these guys are capable, we might see history in the making. Irv tells Derice he'll see him at the finish line. And they get off to an even better start than they did yesterday, shaved off another couple hundredths of a second, and they're off to their best time. They're just blazing through the course here. We see a shot of inside the bobsled, where we see a bolt coming loose. The announcer says this may not be good as they start to kind of wiggle around the course, and as they take a turn, and they're on a record pace as they're doing it, the sled tips over. And we see him just kind of scrape along the walls. Can see some sparks coming from their helmet. And the sled is just coming to a stop here. We see some EMTs kind of running toward the sled. The guys are motionless here for a few seconds. And finally we hear Sanka say, Derice, you dead man? No, man. I got to finish the race. And he starts getting up here. And the next shot is the guys carrying the sled on their shoulders as the EMTs kind of part. And they start heading toward the finish line. The crowd begins to clap, and it's actually their enemies from the bar. The East German guys are actually the one that starts the clap. The Americans join in. Irv's old coach, Kurt, smiles and starts clapping. We see Junior's dad, who unzips his coat to reveal a Jamaican bobsled team shirt. And they cross the finish line here to a huge ovation from the crowd. Derice is stopped by the East German driver. He says, hey, Jamaica, you did good. See you in 4 years. Junior and Newell hug it out. Sanka kisses his lucky egg. And Irv and Derice embrace with a big hug. And they get together for a picture. And then really the last scene here is Mr. Coolidge hanging the new picture on his wall right above the one of Irv and Derice's father. And then we have the screen goes black. And it just says, the Jamaican bobsled team returned to their country as heroes. 4 years later, they returned to the Olympics as equals. What'd you think of the ending here?
You know, listening to you sort of recap it, it sort of like exactly mirrors the ending of Happy Gilmore. Where okay. We got the announcers that are like, the underdog Happy Gilmore, the underdog the Jamaicans. Or, you know, and they've really showed the audience what they're capable of. He's neck to neck with Shooter. Jamaicans are riding like equals. And then tragedy strikes. The only difference is we don't get a happy ending in Cool Runnings. I mean, not in a traditional sense, because I think it's like a tear-jerking right. scene to see them. One, how they don't die. I always am like, shit, they're dead.
Yeah, it feels like somebody's neck would have gotten pretty seriously injured as it's scraping along a hard, icy wall.
Who was that? Was that Stone Cold Steve Austin that got the pile driver that broke his neck?
Yep, from Owen Hart.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. Like, I don't know how. I mean, good for them. I mean, you know, blessings
all be to them. All we're missing is JR going, "Good God, that must have killed him." But yeah, I mean, it's a great ending though. I mean, I like that it comes up at the end and you do get that kind of finalization that they do return in 4 years. I think, you know, maybe had John Candy not passed away, maybe there was a sequel in plans. I just think you can't replace that character. Sure, so that's why the story ended the way it did. But overall, I mean, I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I just feel like this movie holds up really well. It looks amazing. It doesn't look dated at all. And I think I just, as I watch it more and more, I get a new appreciation for John Candy and the emotional scenes and, you know, also just a lot of the comedy from like Sanka and, you know, all those guys.
Yeah. And the one thing that like I really do appreciate about this movie that always sort of bugs me about a lot of movies, especially sports movies, is there's really not a romantic subplot.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I mean,
good point.
I mean, it's not that, I mean, you can argue that there's not female representation in this movie in that regard, but there's
very
They stick to the facts of the story and about what happened, and they tell it in a damn good fashion. And I think that's why it holds up so strong.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, they didn't really add stuff that they probably didn't need to. Let's preview the next episode. We're going to be back next week on Monday. We'll have our teaser trailer, and we're going to be reviewing the film that you guys voted on, and we're jumping into Nightmare on Elm Street. JD, how pumped are you to be doing Nightmare on Elm Street, and what are you looking forward to most?
You know, I say this every single time, what I'm looking forward to most, and it's seeing Johnny Depp in bed.
What?
No, I think, yeah. No, I'm so happy that we had such a great outpouring of voting. I mean, it was a pretty fierce competition, and Nightmare on Elm Street ranks among my all time favorites. And so it's going to be a great discussion. Like I'm super looking forward to this.
And we're also going to be joined that episode by Black Cat Shadow. They're also up on iTunes. So give them a listen, subscribe to their page. They've got some really cool interviews that they've done with some celebrities and horror icons. That's kind of the genre they focus a lot on. And while you're there, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our channel. And you can find us on social media at Back in Time Pod, Facebook, /Back in Time Pod, and then online, backintimepod.wordpress.com. And all of our episodes are also up on YouTube. For JD and myself, it's time to climb back into the DeLorean and punch in today's date and return back to present day. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll be back on Monday with the teaser trailer breakdown for Nightmare on Elm Street. See ya.
Go jam.
It means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one. Both of you.